Health and Human Service.
We'll do it again. Ready?
Now we will really call the Health and Human Services Division to order for Tuesday, April 1st. I believe this will be our last hearing for this session unless something changes. We have three bills on the agenda today. Let me just do a couple of minutes of explanation of what we're doing. Senate File 1484 is the omnibus licensing bill that Senator Sharon is carrying. It has the base bill, which is a small dental licensing provision modification that does not need a fiscal note. It has four other licensing bills incorporated into it: Senate File 511, Senate File 2134, Senate File 2135, and Senate File 1890. Those four members have in their packets two of the fiscal notes, and the other two fiscal notes just came in, and we're going to have those handed out. They're already handed out, so they're right next to your packets. So in evaluating the fiscal on Senate File 1484, which again is the omnibus licensing bill, members will have to look at the four individual fiscal notes in order to put them together. The other two bills on the agenda, Senate File 511 and Senate File 1890, are two of the bills that are incorporated into the omnibus licensing bill. They need to travel separate. They're going to be dual-tracked, essentially, and travel separately as well. So once we finish the discussion on Senate File 1484, whatever amendments are adopted to the two provisions that are separate will be also offered and adopted onto the standalone bills without a great deal of additional testimony. We're not, you know, some of these have a great deal of discussion to go through, and whatever the committee lands on will be incorporated into the standalone bills, and we will move those without a great deal of additional fanfare. Any questions on process, how we plan to proceed here? So, yeah, just to the two that are 2134 and 2135 that are in the packet, these are Senator Rosen's Board of Pharmacy bills. And then 511, of course, is the APRN bill, and 1890 is the Board of Nursing bill, just for orientation of members. So with that, a bit wordy intro, Senator Sharon.
What did you say about 1484, that Senator Hayden's bill?
1484 is your dental licensing bill. That's the vehicle that is the omnibus licensing bill. And so it's just the core, and it does not have need a fiscal note. It's just a very minor change to the dental practice, and it has become the vehicle for your
we're putting everything into that bill, but there is elements in that original bill of Senator Hayden's that's related to dental licensing provision modifications that will also need to be reviewed.
Right.
Okay.
Senator Sharon.
Okay,
Senate File 1484.
Senate File 1484 is our omnibus bill. The language in the bill is divided so that it may be difficult for the committee members to follow each of the subjects that we're talking about in here, because elements of some bill are moved around. So what I think I'm going to do is Article 1 is health-related licensing board, so that's the dental licensing provisions and the nursing board provisions. Article 2 is the Board of Pharmacy provisions. These are Senator Rosen's bill. And Article 3 is the advanced practice registered nurse. So that's contained together. So in order to help the committee follow the dialogue, I think that what we will do is take them by subject rather than page by page. And I'll do the best I can to orient you to the pages that are in the bill. Is that agreeable with you?
Absolutely, Senator Sharon.
Okay, so trying to figure out, because I know that there are some of these that are requiring more conversation, maybe if it would be agreeable with Senator Rosen, we might begin with Article 2, which is the Board of Pharmacy provisions. Senate Files 2135 and 2134. These are on pages 21 through 80 of the bill.
Senator Rosen?
And I'm going to ask Senator Rosen to present or answer any of the questions that the committee. These, of course, went through our committee process. These are pharmacy board policy provisions and modifications and clarifications. There's controlled substance schedule modifications. And the second bill, 2134, is prescription monitoring program modifications.
And I know, Senator Sharon, that Cody Weiberg is also in the audience if members have questions.
Maybe Cody would like to come to the table in case there are
questions.
Mr. Chair, do you want amendments to this portion right now, or do you want to wait and just present the bill?
Let's wait and present the bill.
Okay. So briefly on 2135, Mr. Chair, is the Board of Pharmacy General Policy Bill. And there's four sections, main sections to it. The first one is compounding and manufacturing. We had a situation in 2003 where we passed legislation in response to a major incident that involved a shipment of contaminated compounded drug to Minnesota. There were 60 deaths and 750 cases of fungal infection. So this creates a licensing requirement for outsourcing facilities, and it also creates the creates a state equivalent of Section 503A of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act that exempts pharmacies and pharmacists that prepare compounded products from the requirement to be licensed drug manufacturers. It also has a synthetic drug section, which the board has been very involved in several years. It worked with the AG office to develop language to modify the definition of drug and clarify that products containing synthetic drugs are subject to prohibitions on the sale of misbranded and adulterated drugs. It grants the board the authority to issue cease and desist orders that can be reviewed by administrative law judge. It exempts Section 152.26, so they do not apply to the sale of designer drugs, prohibits the sale of designer drugs, and makes permanent the board's authority to use expedited rulemaking process to add drugs to Schedule 1. It also added several more drugs to Schedule 1, which was approved by the BCA law enforcement and county prosecutors. It also has a pharmacist immunization. The board worked with the Department of Health, so it allows the pharmacist to administer vaccines and puts into statute what the best practice standards should be for this section. And it also has a disciplinary provision, which updates the disciplinary actions that were quite antiquated, and it was modeled after the Medical Practice Act, which was reviewed by the AG's office. The board is not asking for any more authority than other health licensing boards currently have. And all the board is required is to follow the rigorous due process procedures that are spelled out in statutes by the Administrative Procedure Act and rules. Mr. Chair, this has been through, Senator Sharon's committee, State and Local Gov, and Judiciary Committee.
Any questions of members? Seeing none, the next sections you wish to cover, Senator Sharon?
Section 21, it would be the second bill, 2134.
Cody, why don't you?
Stay right here.
Mr. Weiberg, I think this is yours too, I think. Partly.
This is a bill that the pharmacy establishes the prescription monitoring program to monitor and report on Schedule 2, 3, and 4 controlled substances that are dispensed to the general public and residents of the state. As you know, drug abuse is becoming a larger and larger problem, both nationally and locally, but the Board of Pharmacy is requesting several changes that are in Senator Rosen's bill to help improve the program and its responsiveness to this growing crisis. And Senator Rosen, did you want to review some of what those changes are?
Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Sharon, I think I'll just turn it over to Dr. Weiberg, and he can just go through the changes. There is a study that's required for the prescription monitoring program. I think I would prefer a little more beef into the bill, but I think this is a good compromise, and they've worked long and hard on this. So.
Yes. You know, I think that Mr. Weiberg is just a great resource to answer any of the questions. The highlights of this reform to the pharmacy board are directed at trying to manage growing problem with controlled substance prescriptions, and it requires the prescriptions for controlled substances to be reported to these are Schedule 5 substances now be reported to the process that tracks the prescribing of these medications. It requires reports of controlled substances dispensed to those who are in long-term care facilities, hospices, or receiving home based community services. It allows prescribers and pharmacists to access the database for any medically valid reason instead of only when they're prescribing a controlled substance. This is to improve our capacity to track what's happening with these substances. There is a task force that advises on changes that need to the processes that watches trends that triggers maybe changes in how we treat these substances, and the responsibilities of that task force are increased. They allow retention of data for 5 years, but allows access to the data that's only 12 months only to the administrator of the program. And that's the purpose of that access to data is trends, trying to track trends of what's happening so that the pharmacy board can engage in intervention or recommendations for change. It allows the health licensing boards to access the database when they have a complaint which alleges a criminal activity. And it allows the health professional services program that you've heard about a lot in relationship to the various boards to access this information for individuals who are enrolled in that program, in the health services program that monitors licensed professionals who may have gotten into difficulty with drugs or alcohol. This information is kept private to that managing board and is not shared. It's not then turned over to the various boards. And it also initiates, as Senator Rosen said, a study of the issue of prescription monitoring program database to understand better what it is that this rich resource can do to help us in relationship to the problem of growing prescription drug abuse. So that's generally the contents of the bill. And I think that if there are any questions that we could ask the expert here.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question I have, Senator Sharon, or for Dr. Weiberg, is how does this bill change? In particular, the interest I have is the shopping, going from doctor to doctor, looking for drugs to abuse. So does this bill have anything to do in regards to assisting in eliminating that ability, or is this purely a compounding and data collection has a different purpose?
Mr. Weiberg?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Cody Weiberg, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. Senator Kiffmeyer, the purpose of the prescription monitoring program is to try to reduce doctor shopping. The board, as Senator Sharon mentioned, has worked for about 3 years with our advisory committee and other groups on this particular legislation. We feel there are a number of provisions in the bill that Senator Sharon explained that will make the program better and more useful. One that maybe didn't, Senator Sharon might not have mentioned, that is our number one request from users of the systems, which would be the prescribers and pharmacists, is Minnesota is currently the only state in the country that when a doctor, for example, goes in and generates a report on a particular patient, all the data for the prescriptions for that patient are listed except who prescribed, the prescribers of the prescriptions. And so that alone is going to make the data more useful. And then in addition, there's another piece that I think is in this provision as well, and it's referred to as unsolicited reporting. And that actually is going to allow the staff of the Board of Pharmacy for the first time to take a look at the data using criteria given to us by the task force to identify people who might, not definitely, but who might be doctor shopping based on the data. And then we'll be able to send out unsolicited letters or reports to the prescribers and pharmacists who are taking care of those particular patients. So we think all of those things will make this program more useful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was very helpful.
Thank you. Senator Rosen, and then before we move to the next two bills, you mentioned you have some cleanup language for these to offer as an amendment. Maybe we should clean these two sections up before moving on. Is that?
I do.
Sure. Do we need to? What do you mean? Hold on one second. So, yeah, we're going to clean up these two bills. There's a couple of amendments that need to be made. Some judiciary amendments were made to the bills that we pledged to fix when we had the omnibus bill before us. So, Senator Rosen.
Right. Mr. Chair, I have the A-17 amendment that...
Senator Rosen moves the A-17 amendment.
And that is, Mr. Chair, appropriate for the Senate File 2134, the PMP bill. This is cleanup language and some suggested language specifically on 1.5 to allow for the use of the prescription monitoring program database to identify potentially inappropriate prescribing of controlled substances.
Any questions on the A-17 amendment? Senator Sharon, this would be a friendly amendment?
This is a friendly amendment.
Seeing no questions... On Senator Rosen's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I do have the A-18 amendment for Senate File 2135.
Senator Rosen moves the A-18 amendment. Senator Rosen, on the amendment.
And this has to do with, Mr. Chair, pharmaceuticals that are in the nuclear industry. Perhaps Mr. Weiber can explain this a little bit better, but compounding does not include a minor deviation from such directions with regard to radioactive activity, volume, or stability. It goes on. It's from a pharmaceutical and medical product distribution out of Ohio, and they are just concerned. They actually complimented the bill, said it was probably one of the best in the nation, but they'd like to make sure that nuclear is part of the compounding. There are some nuclear's got a short shelf life apparently, and so when they're using it to do scans, they inject it and they have to have a little more lead time here. So I'm going to let Dr. Weiberg explain this one.
Dr. Weiberg, very briefly.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, radiopharmaceutical preparation is very highly specialized. There's already language in there that provides some protection, which is probably why they think it's the best bill they've seen in the country. looking at this language, I think what this does is normally if a pharmacist compounds something, they have to exactly follow the recipe, if you will, that the prescriber has given them. In radiopharmaceuticals, they apparently may have to just slightly alter the recipe a little bit, and this allows them to do this without having to go back and get new orders. They're probably doing this under protocols. It's completely acceptable, yeah.
Okay. Senator Sharon, the A18 would be a friendly amendment?
Yes, it would be.
Any further discussion on the A18 amendment? Seeing none. On Senator Rosen's motion, Senator Claussen.
Yeah, thank you. I just have a question. I'm wondering how many licensed nuclear pharmacists we have in the state.
Dr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, Senator Claussen, I don't have the exact number right now, but it's not many. It's a very small specialty. It requires a lot of additional extra training. We do have some, but it's a very small percentage of the 5,000 or 6,000 pharmacists that practice, well under 100, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
On Senator Rosen's motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Rosen moves the A10 amendment. This is a technical cleanup.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair and members, this just takes in the changes that were done in judiciary to the Board of Pharmacy bill. They took out that the court order reporting of the court orders to the bill. It was a huge fiscal cost. So, and state and local, I believe, actually, they took that language out. So this just takes this out of the bill.
And is that huge fiscal?
No.
The fiscal note is drafted according to having adopted this amendment.
Mr. Chair, correct.
Senator Sharon, is the A10 a friendly amendment
it
as
is.
Well? Any further discussion on Senator Rosen's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Albrecht.
To be clear so members don't get confused, the fiscal note for that bill is the one for Senate File 2135, and it actually does include the Supreme Court costs that have just been removed.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
But our
five.
Correct. Fiscal note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the appropriation language on the bill does not carry those costs, but the Supreme Court is the lion's share of this cost. It's $952,000 a year, 14 FTEs. If we didn't clean up that and we did just adopt the amendment that got rid of all but $5,000 of the cost for Senate File 2135. Nice job, Senator Rosen.
Hi, Matt. Mr. Chair.
Any other
Mr.
amendments
Chair?
On these two sections? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Since Senator Rosen saved it, does she also then able to spend it?
In the state government special revenue fund over at the Supreme Court? Sure.
Good question.
No, it's general fund we saved. Oof. Wow.
Well,
in the Supreme
love
Court.
A sale.
In the
sale.
Supreme Court. All right. Any other amendments on those two portions of this bill, the ones that are Senate File 2134 and 2135? All right. So with that, we'll move on from those two. And Senator Sharon, it's your call whether we move to the Board of Nursing or the APRN.
We're going to do the Board of Nursing.
Okay.
You're going to leave?
The Board of Nursing.
All right, so let me orient everyone. This is in the first article. There is also language in this first article related to Senator Hayden's dental licensing provision. So Senator Hayden and I will separate that out and have Senator Hayden participate in our discussion about the dental licensing components of Article 1. But we'll set that aside for now and focus only on the provisions related to the Board of Nursing. And for your orientation, they are pages 2 through 6 and 18 through 21 in Article 1. Page 2 through 6, and then you have to pass over the dental language and go to lines 18 through 21 to pick up the language related to the Board of Nursing. And there is a fiscal note. I don't know if you're going to be looking at those separately or at the same time that we review the contents of this language. But it's whatever you wish. We do have a couple of amendments also to this, to the Board of Nursing portions of the bill. Would you like me to do those immediately or?
The amendments?
Yes.
Whatever works best for your presentation to make the most efficient use of our time.
Good. Then let's begin with the A-12 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A-12 amendment.
Is that being distributed?
Yep.
I'll just explain that one of the provisions in the Board of Nursing bill allowed for per diem increase to persons who serve on the health licensing boards because they spend a great deal of time away from work, especially if they're engaged in disciplinary review and practice. This was a discussion when the news articles came out with concern about the ability of the board to review the disciplinary complaints. That when the governor met with various members of the board, they talked about how much time the board spends in this activity. And you have to remember the Board of Nursing serves many, many, many licensees as compared to other professions. So this is increases their per diem. It is paid for out of a fee increase. It's not coming from our general fund. And what this amendment does is simply have this occur in the health licensing boards rather than the non-health licensing boards, which also would have been impacted by this without this amendment. The other health licensing boards are informed and aware.
Is there any discussion on the A-12 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Sharon moves the A-12 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you. And then we also have the A-10 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A. What? We already did the A-10 amendment. I think that was the $1 million of Supreme Court costs, wasn't it? Here we go.
Thank you very much. In the words of my most honored hero, Rosanna Dana. Never mind. All right. So to the bill, now we're going to focus on the board. Is there another
one? To the A-11 amendment?
Oh, yes. And then we have the A-11 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A-11 amendment.
And as this is being distributed, one of the as we get into the meat of what this bill is about, you'll see that there's a lot of dialogue about the relationship between the HPSB, which is the Health Professional Services Program. The Health Professional Services Program is a program that was formed by boards. And their function, this Health Professional Services Board program, is to monitor health licensed professionals who might be under the disciplinary process of one of the health licensing boards, nursing, dentistry, MDs, all of them can be participating in this health professional services program. And the boards all come together and through their fees pay and support this HPSP program, which monitors licensed nurses and other licensed professionals who otherwise might not be allowed to practice because of disciplinary processes that they are engaged in because of misuse of drugs or alcohol. So as you know, I've asked all of you to participate in checking off the audit for the Board of Nursing and to take a look at the relationship between these this health professional services program, how it's organized and structured in relationship to the boards. Is part of what that study would be to improve our capacity to do what the job of the boards are, which is to protect the public and make sure the public's interests are well represented in relationship to licensed health professionals who serve vulnerable populations. So there have been efforts to try to maybe reorganize or change the structure of the health professional services program. And this amendment simply says that we want to wait until it, also the health professional services program is going through a strategic planning process right now, and they're engaged in a process to take a look at their own system, which will be completed sometime in the fall. So this amendment simply says we really don't want to move ahead with changes to that program, its structure anyway, until we complete those processes of analysis.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what we're doing is passing legislation to say we can't pass legislation?
That's
so then we could just come back
for the very
on the
time.
Floor next week, next month, and delete this section because we have the authority to pass whatever legislation we'd like. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to create stability so that we don't create chaos. I just don't think this is legislatively a good idea to say the legislature can't pass legislation, because all we'd have to do is delete this section, and we'd have all the power back.
Or we could say notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm. Touché.
Or we could just do it anyway, yes. I mean, Senator Sharon, I'm a little nervous about, I mean, putting in that the legislature shall not pass any legislation, you know, dot, 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 fill in the blank. I don't know as I think that really gains us anything. I don't think it's enforceable. It's not.
I'll withdraw the A11 amendment.
Okay.
All right.
Senator Sharon.
We also need to take up the A14 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A14 amendment.
This amendment defines the appropriations.
This is the appropriations article, basically?
Yes.
For the whole bill.
Yes.
And this works with tracking sheet, and there is no tracking sheet. This is all state government special revenue fund, but this works and does what it needs to do, Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and members, what this amendment does is there are three bills. They had fiscal notes, and they are separate articles within the bill, and this puts the appropriations that goes with each of those individual bills into those sections so that they are isolated in and of themselves. So if any one of them wants to be pulled out, you can pull it out, and its appropriations go with it.
Okay. Any questions on the A14 amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Sharon's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Okay, I think that's it for now, so that I keep you in context of what we're talking about. So now we're going to go to Article 1, the portions of Article 1 related to the health-related licensing boards.
Okay.
Section 1, these are, again, pages 2 through 6, section 1 and 2. authorizes the Board of Nursing to bring disciplinary action against a licensee who has been discharged from the Health Professional Services Program or any other alternative monitoring or diversion program for the reasons other than satisfactory completion of the program. So, said simply, if somebody fails in the program or does not follow through with the contractual agreement that is established by participation in that program in order for them to continue practicing nursing, which is what that program is about, that the Board of Nursing can immediately bring disciplinary action against that licensee. Section 2 requires the Board of Nursing to deny a license or automatically revoke a license if the applicant or licensee has been convicted of a felony-level criminal sexual conduct offense. Now you want to skip over sections 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 13, and go to... Section 19. And we pick up language again related to the Health Licensing Board. This language in this section requires the health-related licensing boards to temporarily suspend the license of any licensee who has been discharged from the Health Professional Services Program based on an allegation that the regulated person has engaged in conduct that might cause risk to the public. Excuse me, I said requires. We changed the language in judiciary to may.
Okay, I was scouring.
I could feel it.
What line again?
In the bill itself, it is corrected. 19.3. It's 19.3. It says may. May.
Boom, there it is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, and then also in this section, the license is suspended, may be suspended until the completion of disciplinary investigation. We have put time limits in there to make sure that that is rapid because we know that a suspension of a license has a significant impact on the licensee, but we also have to balance that with the need to make sure people are safe that are served by those professions. Section 20 requires this is the program manager for this program, HPSP, which is it is the program that's supported by all the health licensing boards to monitor, make certain that we can allow people to continue to practice as long as they're monitored by the Health Professional Services Program. And it articulates in this section what they need to report to the board. So if a person is discharged from the program, is causing harm, is unlawfully substituting adulterous medications. Mm-hmm. What's this
one? That's the HIV, HPV, HCV, Infection Control Program at the Department of Health.
Okay, these are Department of Health provisions around HIV, which is 214. When you see those numbers, 214.17. Okay. Unlawfully substitutes or adulterates medications. Writes a prescription in the name of a person other than the prescriber. Those are all alters a prescription for the purpose of obtaining a drug or unlawfully uses a controlled or mood-altering substances or uses alcohol while providing patient care or otherwise on duty, et cetera. So this section determines what the Health Professional Services Board needs to report to the appropriate board. In Section 21, certifies that
criminal rehabilitation.
Yeah. Chapter 364 is the Criminal Rehabilitation Act, and this section certifies that it does not apply to any licensee that has been denied or revoked by the Board of Nursing due to a conviction of a felony-level criminal sexual conduct offense. And I think that is... are all of the sections that are related to the health licensing boards. This bill was heard in judiciary as well as health and human services policy.
Are there any questions of members on this portion of the bill, the Board of Nursing? oversight. Is there anyone in the public who wished to offer testimony on the Board of Nursing components of the bill? Seeing none, there's only one more section of the bill.
Senator no, one more Sharon. Section. There's an, there, under this article,
oh,
we also need to go through Senator Hayden's
dental
licensing provisions. Okay. And if you give me a second, I'll get that pulled together. To remind you, the provisions that we're referring to still in Article 1, it's pages 6 through 18, sections 4 through 17. This bill mostly makes technical changes to the Board of Dentistry statute. It removes all references to the American Dental Association when referring to the Commission on Dental Accreditation. So it's an updating. The bill also clarifies that CPR training for dentists and dental assistants and for restorative dental hygienists has to be done through either an American Heart Association provider course or through the American Red Cross. Also, the board's ability is in place to waive the clinical exam for some applicants under current law, but that right is eliminated in this bill. There are other technical and conforming changes. The bill increases fees for failing professional development portfolio audits twice as a consequence. That's just a summary of the contents, and I would encourage you to have Senator Hayden speak to his bill, and we have representatives here from the Board of Dentistry to answer questions as well.
Senator Hayden, did you have additional...
Well, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Sharon, for going over that. I think Mr. Schrag is there to give us some comments in the walk through the bill, and I think that would be great.
Mr. Schrag?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hayden, the determination was made that there would be no fiscal significant fiscal impact that would require a fiscal note on the provisions addressing dentistry, and so... the rest of the provisions are really housekeeping and policy, and if you'd like me to address those, I will, but...
No, that's just fine. Any questions of members? Okay.
We have a member. We have someone who's requested to speak to this.
Oh, is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak on these dental provisions? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Ahern. I'm here on behalf of the Health Safety Institute. The Health Safety Institute is a nationally recognized and certified provider of CPR training. The Board of Dentistry, since March 7th of last year, issued a notice that it would no longer recognize equivalent CPR trainers, such as the Health Safety Institute, and instead rely on either the Heart Association or the American Red Cross. And as a longtime equivalent provider, the Health Safety Institute has been involved in a continuous discussion with the Board of Dentistry, and there is a current rulemaking in which they're participating on that issue. As I understand, the bill before you was amended to exclude all equivalent providers and became public in the committee report that came out on March 17th, so that explains kind of my late appearance and the company's late appearance, and appreciate your forbearance. So we just learned about this 10 days ago. I understand that the Board of Dentistry would rather not be in the business of approving equivalent providers of CPR, which is currently under the statute their duty, and so that's being proposed to be stricken. An amendment has been prepared before you, the A-19 amendment, that provides possibly a middle course. Rather than simply eliminate and lock in two providers of CPR training, it recognizes certification that is already done by the Dental Assisting National Board, which is recognized by the Board of Dentistry, and has, I have a list here of a good number of organizations that are nationally certified for CPR training. And so the A-19 amendment merely provides a middle ground that if the board would choose not to get into the business of determining equivalent CPR trainers, they could rely on the Dental Assisting National Board, who they already recognize, and utilize their expertise. The list I'm sending around is just the list of other CPR trainers that would be excluded under the bill as it currently exists.
Senator Sharon, Mr. Schrag, any response to this?
Mr. Schrag?
Mr. Chair, yes, this is an issue that the Board of Dentistry has been facing since we implemented this this statute, and that's been 5 or 6 years ago that the board determined that all regulated dental professionals in the state needed to be certified in CPR. And I think that the inclusion of the provision or an equivalent entity was unfortunate at the time. We had no idea what that would result in. And what it has resulted in is confusion on the part of licensees who felt that they were taking a course that that would meet the standard that was established and found out later that they were not in compliance because that course was either found not to be equivalent or impossible for the board to determine the equivalence of. Administratively, it's been very challenging with the number of instructors and courses that are out there that indicate or claim that they're based upon the American Heart Association or based upon the American Red Cross. And the board has decided that rather than using something that's based on those recognized gold standards that are recognized internationally, that those are the standards that would be set in order to permit dental professionals to carry out their duties, to utilize nitrous oxide and other things that they need in order to protect the public.
So we do not have an amendment before us. Is there anyone wishing to move that amendment? Without an amendment before us, I think...
Mr. Chair, there was some discussion that it would possibly be offered, but if it hasn't, I guess it's not formally before you. So I appreciate your opportunity to address you.
So, did you have an author in there? Not here? I mean, that's...
Not if it hasn't been authored at this point.
It hasn't been offered.
So, Mr. Chair... I've had some discussions. I mean, I just don't want Mr. Ahern to just be totally out there too. I mean, out there on his own. But you know, it came to me rather late, and frankly, I know that there are some concerns from the Dental Association, and I can appreciate this. This seems to be somewhat reasonable, but hopefully, that we got a little ways to go before this bill becomes law. So I would encourage you, Mr. Ahern, and Mr. Track, to continue to have a conversation. I'm not comfortable in offering the amendment today. The licensing board seems to be a little resistant to this, so I don't want, 12 hours, because that's when I found out about it, to kind of make this decision. So I guess what I'd like to do is not offer that today, but hopefully we have some conversations moving forward and see if we can find a pathway that might be able to be satisfied to both of you guys. So I do want to acknowledge that we have had some conversations, but not enough that I feel comfortable offering the amendment as of yet, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Hayden.
Thank you. All right. So is that the extent of the health-related licensing boards then, Senator Sharon? Article 1?
That completes Article 1.
Anyone else have any amendments to offer to Article 1, health licensing board's provisions? Moving on then to the APRN, maybe we'll have a brief introduction to it and take a little bit of public testimony. We'll ask members of the public wishing to testify to be brief, and then we'll move to possible amendments. Senator Sharon.
Okay, so Article 3 is the advanced practice registered nurse portion of our bill. This is on pages 80 through 101, sections 1 through section 40. Members, this is a bill that is designed to reduce the barriers to practice for advanced practice nurses. Oftentimes in this committee, you will have various kinds of bills come before you that develop new practices for licensure and defining those scopes of practice. And sometimes you have bills that come in front of you that attempt to expand a scope of practice, as we did, I think it was last year, with persons who drive ambulances being able to do visits in people's homes. But this bill is not about expanding scope of practice or changing any practices that are currently in place for these licensed professionals. This is about changing some of the restrictions and barriers that are in place for those who do practice one of four different advanced practice levels. I know that you've had a lot of conversation with advocates around this subject, so I would like to discuss the bill by saying that there are elements of this bill that relate to the clinical nurse specialist and the nurse practitioner, which we call the advanced practice nurse. So there are elements in this bill that relate to them that may be different than elements that relate to the clinical nurse midwife, and then elements that relate specifically to the fourth group, which are the CRNAs, or the Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetists. So the language, I know, gets complicated. We're talking about lots of variations on the theme. But by and large, it increases the access of the health person seeking health care by removing unnecessary Nurse Practice Act barriers and allow the practice of registered nurses to practice to the frivolous extent of their education and training. There are graduate educated nurses who are engaged in four different clinical roles: the clinical nurse specialist, the nurse midwife, the nurse practitioner, and the registered nurse anesthetist. We have around 6,000 APRNs. Of those, close to 4,000 are nurse practitioners. Just under 2,000 are, like 1,700, are CRNAs. 540 are clinical nurse specialists, and 270 are nurse midwives. So what the bill does, let's go through what the bill does. The advanced practice registered nurse under Article 3 creates a separate license for advanced practice registered nurses and permits advanced practice nurses to practice independently without collaborative agreements. But I want to be clear at this point that the independence of practice has to do with the collaborative agreement. Later in the bill, you'll notice that there is, or at least I'll be offering some amendments that require a postgraduate supervisory process that will occur through a collaborative management agreement. So I don't want to confuse you about that. That by and large, the bill removes the collaborative management and written collaborative language, but we do reapply that language in an amendment that I will be offering to you for the ongoing supervision post-graduation for advanced practice nurses who are practicing as CRNAs in a licensed facility. So, and the language we talk about practicing independently, I need to be clear with you that when we're talking about the certified nurse anesthetists, that their practice will not be in separate nurse-led clinics. The independent practice there is restricted in the language of the bill to licensed facilities. Those are hospitals and or surgery centers where there are a variety of other supportive services surrounding those CRNAs. So that is different in relationship to that practice, whereas the other advanced practice nurses might be going out into the community and practicing outside of a facility. Section 1 makes conforming language to the definition of an advanced practice registered nurse to specify clearly that they're licensed and that the National Nursing Certification Organization and that there must be accreditation based on National Certification Organization. Another underlying goal of this legislation is to bring uniformity and conformity and standardization to the process of certifying, licensing, regulating, and disciplining advanced practice nurses. Section 2 defines what a certification means. Section 3 modifies the definition of clinical nurse practice. Section 4 defines language to describe collaboration. Section 5 is technical change. Section 6 defines nurse midwife practice. Section 7 modifies the definition of nurse practitioner practice. And it's pretty clearly articulated there as providing health promotion, disease prevention, health education, counseling, health assessment, screening activities, diagnosing and treating and facilitating patient management of their acute and chronic illnesses, ordering and performing, supervising and interpreting diagnostic tests, prescribing pharmacological and non-pharmacological therapies, and consulting and collaborating or referring to other health care is warranted by the needs of their patients. Section 8 defines what we mean by population focus. That's a term that we use because the scopes of practice within these four practices are narrowly defined to a certain particular population. For example, adult psychiatric mental health or pediatrics. Section 9 modifies the definition of the practice of advanced practice registered nursing to require the performance of an expanded scope of nursing in at least one of the recognized advanced registered nurse roles and for the population focus. It describes what the responsibility and accountability is for the APRN to their patients, for recognizing the limits of their knowledge and their experience, for planning for the management and situations beyond their experience, so those situations in which they must make referral, and for planning the management of those situations. It also includes accepting referrals from, consulting with, collaborating with other healthcare providers as warranted, again, by the needs of the patient. That's what drives this. Section 10 modifies the definition of prescribing to state that it does not include the recommending or administering of a drug or therapeutic device for anesthesia and related services by a certified registered nurse anesthetist. So it separates that out. It takes that out of the definition of prescribing. And that's because others who prescribe under the various roles would not be administering an anesthesia. Section 11 amends the definition of prescription to clarify that any prescription for a drug must comply with various rules and regulations that govern medications and their reliability. Section 12 defines primary care provider. Section 13 is a definition for registered nurse anesthetist practice. Section 14 is the roles of advanced practice registered nurses. Section 15 and 16 are conforming changes. Section 17 establishes an effective date that the APRN must be licensed by the Board of Nursing and an advanced practice registered nurse. And it also articulates the requirements for licensure under 17. 18 creates a grandfather clause that requires the board to issue a license to an applicant for licensure if they've been recognized to practice as an APR in the state on July 1st, 2015. Section 19 states that the applicant for an advanced practice license by endorsement is eligible for licensure if the applicant is licensed or registered as a professional nurse, demonstrates national certification, complies with the advanced practice nursing educational requirements that were in effect in Minnesota at the time that advanced practice registered nurse completed the advanced education program. Section 20, conforming changes that specify that an applicant must provide evidence of current certification or recertification in their appropriate role, one of the population focuses, by a nationally accredited certifying body recognized by the board. This is a big part of the motivation of this particular legislation, is to really streamline and get control over the accrediting process for advanced practice nurses. Section 23 this is a section that talks about the terminology that only those who have the license can use their advanced practice registered nurse role with a designation. And it requires those nurses to use the appropriate designation when they identify themselves on documents. We removed language from the original bill at the request of one of our members to erase confusion that the APRN with a doctorate would not use the term doctor in order to erase confusion for persons. And it requires, for those who are concerned about being able to differentiate practitioners, it does require in the legislation that an APRN provide a clear identification of their APRN designation when they are providing care. Section 25 specifies that an APRN is authorized to prescribe, to procure, sign for, record, administer over-the-counter controlled substances, including sample drugs, and plan and initiate therapies. Section 26 requires an APRN to comply with the requirements that are related to controlled substance at the federal level. And the Board of Nursing is required to maintain records of all APRNs that have registration numbers that are required of them in order to prescribe. Section 26 or 27, conforming 34, is a penalty for nurses who are practicing without a license. Section 35 is conforming changes. Section 36 modifies the definition of practitioner to include a licensed advanced practice registered nurse as the definition applies under the Board of Pharmacy. Section 37 includes the use of the prescription drug monitoring program that a licensed advanced registered nurse may prescribe, administer, and dispense controlled substances. So they would be involved in that program. Section 7, going backwards. I think that Section 38 are repealers. So with that, just general overview, we can get into more of the bill a little later. We have testifiers. We also have some amendments. I don't know if you would, how you want to manage amendments at this time, Senator Lurie.
Well, I see that you have a few testifiers. I know a few others have asked to testify. Maybe we'll get some testimony, open it up for questions of members, and then entertain. I think that the issues around the amendments will be become clear as we listen to testimony a little bit, some of the issues that we need to work on a little bit. With that, you wish to call up the testifiers you have? I have Linda Huber.
Linda Huber is a certified registered nurse anesthetist. President of the Minnesota Association of Nurse Anesthetists. And Andrew Johnson, is he here? He could come forward as well. Andrew also is a certified registered nurse anesthetist.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and provide your insights.
Mr. Chair and committee, my name is Linda Huber. I'm a certified registered nurse anesthetist. I'm also president of the Minnesota Association of Nurse Anesthetists. And as you've heard the numbers, there are approximately 1,500 CRNAs in the state and about 200 other registered nurses who are in anesthesia school. And we have four programs here in Minnesota. Nurse anesthetists are often referred to themselves as healthcare's best-kept secret. The majority of our interactions with patients are unrecognized because our patients are asleep while we are providing their anesthesia care. Nurse anesthetists practice in every setting where anesthesia is delivered: traditional hospital surgical suites, critical access hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers, the U.S. military, and, of course, at the Veterans Administration Affairs. We are the sole provider of anesthesia in Minnesota in 52 of the 72 counties. Nurse anesthetists provide this valuable service in the rural area of Minnesota, thus enabling these healthcare facilities in medically underserved areas to offer their obstetrical, surgical, trauma stabilization, and pain management. Today, anesthesia care is nearly 50 times safer than it was in the early 1980s. Numerous outcome studies have demonstrated that there is no difference in the quality of care provided by nurse anesthetists and our physician counterparts. The education of a nurse anesthetist begins with a bachelor's in nursing, a current license as an RN. A registered nurse must then practice a minimum of 1 year in a critical care unit, such as intensive care, and then can apply for administration to an accredited anesthesia educational program. As an example of an educational program, the University of Minnesota's graduate nurse anesthetist program requires a 3-year curriculum that leads to a doctorate in nursing. The students in that program have graduated at the top of their nursing undergrad classes, have been high-performing nurses in intensive care settings. The student anesthetists complete approximately 3,200 hours of didactic and clinical experiences in their anesthesia program. During their graduate anesthesia program, the students, like all nurse anesthetists, receive excellent academic and clinical foundations in the principles of anesthesia delivery, anesthesia safety, and pain management. It is within the professional scope practice of nurse anesthetists to provide cost-effective pain management services. The majority of pain management services provided for rural Minnesotans is done so by nurse anesthetists. There is a report from the GAO that was published February 7th of 2014 that gives statistics a breakdown for fee-for-service payments. Quote, from 2009 to 2012, CRNAs billed Medicare fee-for-service for a minimal share of selected chronic pain procedures, less than 1/2 of 1% of these procedures in each year. physicians without board certification in pain medicine bill for the majority of the selected procedures each year, while pain physicians consistently bill for roughly 40% of selected procedures. I support Senate File 511 as it recognizes that nurse anesthetists are an integral part of the delivery of safe and cost-effective health care in Minnesota. It also gives nurse anesthetists the tools we need to practice effectively in a rapidly changing health care environment that will rely ever more on all APRNs. As nurse anesthetists, we are not asking to expand our scope of practice. We want to continue to practice as we always have. I thank you for your time, and I'm more than happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Huber. Is it Andrew Johnson? Is that correct? Please state your name again for the record and provide your testimony.
Mr. Chair and Senators, my name is Andrew Johnson, and I'm a certified registered nurse anesthetist. I grew up in a rural farming community in South Dakota, and I have lived and worked in rural Minnesota over the last 4 years, where I'm the sole anesthesia provider for a critical access hospital. Like many rural communities, mine has a large elderly population where chronic pain is an issue. My medical staff and CEO approached me about starting an interventional pain clinic in our facility. I attended a pain management course put on by the American Association of Nurse Anesthetists. After that course, I received an additional education through a 1.5-year mentorship program where my mentor performs over 2,000 interventional procedures a year. I then enrolled in a post-master's advanced pain management program. This course lasted 15 months. After receiving this training and education, I now perform many interventional procedures, which allows my community access to these potentially life-altering procedures. I have performed over 1,000 injections in and around the spine over the last 3 years without any complication. I just want to say that again. I've done over 1,000 injections over the last 3 years without complication. I only perform procedures in which I have been thoroughly trained and am completely comfortable. If I can place a labor epidural at 3 a.m. in the morning, why not a scheduled elective epidural procedure during the day? I am not qualified to perform surgery, including surgical implantation of pain pumps. I am not trained to place cement in or around the spinal column. I am not trained to perform laser discectomies. Consequently, I do not do any of these procedures. As I stated earlier, my medical staff and CEO approached me to start performing interventional pain management procedures because it was a needed service in our community. I have the best interests of my patients in mind. I would not risk my license, livelihood, and family's future by performing procedures outside of my scope of practice. Interventional techniques carry some risk, regardless of who performs them. The AANA states that there is no difference in complication rates comparing medical doctors versus CRNAs when looking at closed claim reviews.
Who's that group?
American Association of Nurse Anesthetists is that group. 100 million Americans suffer from chronic pain. To compare, 26 million Americans suffer from diabetes. Back pain is the leading cause of disability in Americans under 45 years of age. What these numbers tell me is that chronic pain is not being controlled. It is endemic in our society. These numbers are the reason the U.S. Congress declared 2001 to 2010 as a decade of pain control and research. In order to care for the masses, skilled, educated providers are needed. If I did not provide these services in my community, these patients simply would not receive care. Many of my patients rely on public transportation to get to my facility. On several occasions, my nurse and I have driven patients and their cars back to their house because they could not get a ride. To quote my CEO, it is difficult for rural communities to recruit primary care and specialty physicians. Mid-level practitioners are used more robustly in many other states, and increasing their utilization is the future of healthcare. They provide high-quality, affordable care. And the chief of our medical staff also wanted me to let you know that he trusted me to take care of his wife. and that he recommends me to care for his patients without any reservations. It would be a disservice to our community to lose this specialty. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Huber and Ms. Johnson. It sounds like you can already do a lot, but we've got a lot of new language in front of us. And so I guess I'm wondering why we need all this new language if you can already do all the things that you say you're doing. You talked about procedures you couldn't do, and we specifically enumerate that you can't do them. If you already can't do them, and perhaps Senator Sharon can help, why do we need them enumerated? If you already have the ability to do interventional pain management in collaboration with a licensed physician, why do we need new language? I guess I'm wondering what this bill moves forward that you're not already doing. And we talk about rural access issues. If you're already doing it, why do we need new language?
And to kind of an additional concern in that same vein is, I mean, one of the frame that you're putting it in is that this type of service is threatened. I mean, we don't have a bill before us to try to limit what you're doing today. So that is a bit confusing to members, I think, that, you know, I mean, you come forward and you say, we're already doing this and you're threatening our method of practice, and that's not what the bill before us is. That's not what anybody's attempting to do, to the best of my knowledge. So maybe you could try to help us with those general.
There's nothing in this bill that threatens the practice of CRNAs, which is what we're specifically talking about here. I think that's where most of the conversation is. But there have been attempts, and there have been a lot of conversations that have made proposals to change from nursing practice, which is and activities that are already allowed under nursing practice, and to redefine them as medical practice, for example. So I don't know. I haven't heard languages about threat yet, but and a lot of this articulation is here, as Senator Benson is asking, is because as you're working the language of the bill, we're trying to assure stakeholders of what it is that we are specifically talking about. That's why you see the language in there that was added to say what will not be done, because there is a lot of misinformation and visits that were made to members that showed members activities related to interventional pain management and suggestions that nurses will be able to do all sorts of things that they haven't been done before and that we're expanding their scope of practice. So in those conversations that all of you may have heard or been a part of has resulted in our trying to put clarifying language in this bill. So that's why the language is there.
And Senator Sharon, you had another couple of testifiers, is that right? Shirley Brecken and Linda Lindeke, is that correct?
Yes, Shirley Brecken is here to speak to this bill as well in relationship to the Board of Nursing. So they may want to come back up because we have amendments that might be related to why they're on the list here.
Okay, so
for a conversation, I don't know if
maybe their
Ms. Brecken wants to speak.
Testimony would be better after the
right.
amendments are offered. Having opened it up to supporters before the amendments are offered, though I should open it up to folks who have concerns with the bill before amendments are offered. Any other questions of these testifiers before we go to that? Seeing none, looks like Mr. Renner would like to come up. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, Dave Renner with the Minnesota Medical Association. I just will give you some brief overview, and then I'll turn it over to Dr. Will, who can speak to some specifics from a clinical point of view. One of the challenges, and Senator Sharon is correct, we have been trying to address some of the barriers that exist under current law. And that's something that we have been in negotiations, discussions with, and have been in agreement with some of those changes. So current law does require that there be collaborative management, collaborative agreement. Even though that's not in a writing agreement, it's collaborative management. We have agreed that that needs to be changed. Current law requires that there be a written prescribing agreement, again, to try to ensure some kind of collaboration. Again, we have agreed and have been supportive of that change. I think the challenge before you is that if we are removing those requirements, removing that requirement of collaboration, what is it we put in place to ensure protections of the public? I think whenever we talk about scope issues, there is a challenge of we want to make it, we want to help promote the profession, but we also, you have an obligation to make sure we have protections, not for the good practitioners, but for the potential bad practitioners, whether it's in nursing, whether it's in medicine, whether it's in dentistry or any other. I think the biggest difficulty we've had in this discussion is that there is a very clearly overlap of scopes of practice. Much of what physicians do are now being done by nursing. Senator Sharon would say much of what physicians are doing now historically has been more of a nursing model. So there's very clearly overlaps. I think we have been encouraging, and I think legislators have been encouraging us to be looking at how do we move forward in a team-based care. The whole concept of healthcare homes are talking about physicians, nurses, social workers, dentists, pharmacists working together in a team. That's one of the issues that we have been trying to promote as we move forward with legislation. The challenge with this legislation is many physicians work very closely with advanced practice nurses, whether they be nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, or certified nurse anesthetists. And they have a very good working relationship. We are trying to maintain that working relationship, but again, put some parameters to ensure that we have some protections. I think you will hear in the discussions the remaining issues of concern is what do we do with newly graduated advanced practice nurses, just similar to what we do with physicians. After you finish your 4 years of medical school, there is a requirement for at least a three year of residency. That residency is in an integrated setting. It's in a hospital setting. It's an integrated clinical setting where you learn how to practice medicine. I think our concern is that we think we should have similar requirements for advanced practice nurses in a collaborative setting. A second issue is dealing with interpreters. Senator Sharon talked about that the legislation allows ordering and interpreting certain diagnostic tests. We think there needs to be clarification related to advanced imaging, CT scans, MRIs, PET scans, and others. My understanding is that does not seem to be a controversial issue, but we think that needs to be clarified. There is going to be a discussion about, as we move forward with APRNs now having more independence, how do we regulate them? We concede it should be with the Board of Nursing. It had always been with the Board of Nursing. But similar to how we regulate physician assistants under the Board of Medical Practice, you have created an advisory committee made up of PAs and physicians that review those cases and then make recommendations to the Board of Medical Practice. I think our suggestion would be we have a similar process for advanced practice nurses. The ultimate authority remains with the Board of Nursing, but that this advisory group would be the ones so that you have peers reviewing the work of advanced practice nurses. And then the final issue, of course, is related to this interventional pain. And that's the concern that how do we define what that scope is? How do we define where does the scope of medicine begin and end? Where does the scope of advanced practice nurses begin and end? And with that, I think I will turn it over to Dr. Will, who can speak more clinically to some of those issues.
Dr. Will, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Andrew Will. I am a graduate of the University of Minnesota Medical School and a board-certified physical medicine and rehabilitation physician with additional certification by the American Board of Interventional Pain Physicians and the American Board of Pain Medicine. I'm also the current president of the Minnesota Physiatric Society, which is the state organization of physical medicine and rehabilitation physicians. I'm the medical director for the Twin Cities Pain Clinic in Edina, where I've lived and practiced full-time interventional pain management for 15 years. I'm here today to explain why it would be a mistake to radically expand the scope of practice of certified registered nurse anesthetists into the medical subspecialty of interventional pain management, or IPM. Here are some facts. Interventional pain procedures have the potential to paralyze or kill patients. Highly trained, board-certified physician pain specialists spend years in training, an average of 9 years beyond college versus 2.5 for certified registered nurse anesthetists. We learn how to safely place needles into the spine to diagnose and treat chronic pain. The thought of a law that would allow unqualified non-physicians to perform these same procedures on an unsuspecting public is indeed frightening. Recently, the president of the Minnesota Association of Nurse Anesthetists, who you just heard from, said in a Star Tribune interview that nurse anesthetists have no interest in doing complicated pain procedures. However, as currently written, the bill before the legislature would allow nurse anesthetists to do exactly what they claim they are not interested in doing, that is, complicated pain procedures that have the potential to paralyze or kill patients. They have only said they're not interested in doing these laser discectomies, vertebroplasties, or some implantable surgeries, which you just heard from Mr. Johnson. I need to point out that those procedures are very rare and they're not even performed by most interventional pain physicians. So apparently, they believe they're qualified to perform the other 95% or more of interventional pain management, despite lacking any formal accredited training in this field. Pain doctors are certainly not trying to discredit nurses. I work with advanced practice registered nurses every day in my office. I also go to Fairview Salto Hospital where I perform surgery every week, and the nurse anesthetists do provide the surgical anesthesia. The truth is there are qualified interventional pain physicians available to provide expert care all over the state in all the rural areas. Chronic pain is not an emergency, and patients are much better off traveling to a qualified physician specialist for a procedure rather than settling for local care by an unqualified non-physician provider. I grew up in Bemidji, Minnesota, and my parents still live there. When my father needed interventional pain management care last year, he had no difficulty getting the necessary care from an interventional pain management trained anesthesiologist in Bemidji. There is a trained interventional pain management physician within 60 miles of any spot in Minnesota. There is no shortage. Keep in mind that interventional pain management is used to manage chronic pain, so it is not an emergency. It only becomes an emergency if a complication does arise, which I believe is much more likely to happen when performed by an unqualified provider. Despite what you may have heard from the certified registered nurse anesthetists, they actually perform very few pain procedures nationwide. And even in this state, as you just heard, out of 1,500 certified registered nurse anesthetists, I am only aware of less than a dozen that actually perform interventional pain management. The government accounting office recently determined that less than 0.5% are performed by certified registered nurse anesthetists. And you just heard that same statement from Linda Huber. They do not perform much of the interventional pain management in this country at all. This is not within their scope of practice. The trend in this specialty, which is actually now a medical subspecialty, I'll point out that even the Board of Anesthesiology says that board-certified anesthesiologists are not competent with just their basic board certification to be performing interventional pain management. So this is a medical subspecialty, and the trend is towards adding additional training and certification to the process, and this is a good trend. It will increase safety and provide better outcomes for patients across Minnesota. There is a proposed amendment by Senator Franzen that I urge you to support. It would allow this certified registered nurse anesthetist to perform the low back interlaminar epidural injection in a hospital when ordered by a physician. This is most similar to what they are used to performing in their surgical anesthesia work. Allowing them to do anything more than that would be a huge leap of faith, since certified registered nurse anesthetists are simply not trained in this field. I realize this has been a complex topic and a difficult one to learn about, so you can imagine how difficult it is for each Minnesotan to learn about this. The truth is, Minnesotans are counting on you to protect them. Please do protect Minnesotans. Do not allow nurse anesthetists to begin practicing interventional pain management. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Members have questions for these testifiers? Seeing none, maybe we should move to the amendment. Senator Sharon, I believe you mentioned you had some.
Yes, let's see. Of the A22 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A22 amendment. That's being handed out. Senator Sharon, wish to describe the A22 amendment?
Excuse me just a moment, Senator Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. We have made several copies of all of these, changing specific language, so excuse me for the moment. This amendment addresses some of the issues that have been discussed by the testifiers. We know that, I want to make sure that my committee members understand. There are four subjects that you have heard about in the testimony. One is related to the need for an advisory process similar to the one that's used by the Board of Medicine. And it has been requested by the representatives of the Board of Medicine that a similar process be in place for the Board of Nursing as it relates to advanced practice nurses. And section on page 2 of this amendment on the reverse side, beginning on lines 0.25, you see the language amended to the bill that does create an advisory committee that is comprised of advanced registered nurses that represent the various practices that are described in the bill, three Minnesota licensed physicians who work with advanced practice registered nurses, and describes how it's co-chaired and the purposes of the advisory committee in reviewing prescribing trends, emerging practices, recommendations to the board. So that's one of the issues that was raised in our testifiers that we are attempting to be responsive to in this amendment.
And then the first section would be the postgraduate.
The second is the reason I'm hesitating is because of the diagnostic imaging. I did not add this here. I'm assuming that Senator Franzen has an amendment to restrict that. Is that true, Senator Franzen? If not, I need to offer
Senator
that amendment.
Franzen. Did you have an amendment to the A22 amendment? I mean, I think, so help orient members. We have four issues. We have narrowed the number of issues significantly through work of all the folks. And we have four issues remaining: postgraduate training, a residency type concept, and that is the second section of this. We have disciplinary reviews, and we have something proposed here. That's the second section of this proposed amendment. We have whether or not to be able to interpret high-tech scans, and that is not in this amendment. But I believe there's pretty broad consensus that there's a way to get to that issue. The fourth issue is the interventional pain management.
Yes, that's correct.
And that is
correct.
Not addressed in this amendment to date.
Yes, thank you. And I would have added the diagnostic imaging, but I had understood that there was an amendment that will be considered friendly to this bill as we move forward. So the other thing is under subdivision 6 on A22, we are describing in this first section and then later under subdivision D, the component of post licensure-supervised clinical practice that has to occur in the context of the collaborative management or must be employed by a clinic or hospital that has a medical director who is a licensed physician. The practitioner or clinical nurse specialist submit written evidence to the board with the application or upon completion of the required collaborative management clinical experience. And it's for 2,000 hours, which is 1 year. And so this language addresses, is language to introduce something new into the bill about post-graduation supervision. And then sections 1.17 through 1.23 further articulates limitations on procedures performed by CRNAs in the language on 1.20, in specific relates to the concern that Medtronic may have communicated to all of you in their letters about their intrathecal infusion and pumps and neurotransmitter stimulators. Their letter was specific about being opposed to having that implantation or surgical procedure be a part of APR in practice. It is not. So this is another one of those situations in which it's clear that it is not already. It's beyond the scope of practice. But to create assurances, it's articulated specifically in the language of the bill. And Shirley Brecken from the Board of Nursing is here. I would encourage her to restate or state better what it was that I was explaining to you about the 822 bill. Amendment.
Okay. And just to be clear, that section where we're adding one of the things that that CRNAs would not do is the Medtronic issue that we all did receive letters on, correct? It's not. Okay. Ms. Brecken?
Mr. Chair, my name is Shirley Brecken. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Nursing. I hope I can offer a little bit of clarification because I do realize that it's confusing, but Mr. Chair articulated it well. There are the four areas that, again, Mr. Renner addressed, and I'll try to go through those a little bit. The section on collaborative management, earlier today, Senator Sharon indicated to you that that's a repeal, the definition of collaborative management that's currently in the law that has resulted in written prescribing agreements and advanced practice nurses having to pay physicians to collaborate with them, that sort of thing, is proposed to be repealed. However, addressing the concern of that Mr. Renner raised, that is the new graduate having the experience to be able to eventually become an autonomous practitioner, is that the language in Subdivision 6 addresses that. It would require that a nurse practitioner or a clinical nurse specialist who qualifies for licensure would have to work with a physician or an advanced practice registered nurse for 2,000 hours post-graduation before they could practice autonomously. It would also include that the individual, if they were working within a clinic, group practice, or a hospital that has a medical director, that would qualify for the 2,000 hours of collaborative management experience. The provisions that Senator Sharon addressed in lines 117 to 123 address Senator Benson's concern, I think, the issue that she raised earlier, that if CRNAs are able to do certain practices already, why is there language to address that? And it is really to really clarify that these are the things that a CRNA can do, and these are the things that a CRNA cannot do. And line 120 to 121 adds to that list of prohibited practices by a CRNA. The paragraph D addresses what I described earlier in terms of the 2,000 hours. And finally, the Advanced Practice Nursing Advisory Committee. You heard Mr. Renner address the means that the Board of Medical Practice uses to regulate non-physician practitioners, such as PAs, sports medicine, acupuncturists, whatever. difference there is that the Board of Nursing does currently regulate advanced practice registered nurses. This is not a new profession for the board to regulate. The Board of Nursing has been regulating advanced practice nurses for just about 40 years and currently does have on staff an advanced practice registered nurse specialist. There is an advanced practice registered nurse on the Board of Nursing, and like the Board of Medical Practice, whenever a discipline case is complex such that the board staff and board members feel they are unable to address, the board hires a consultant, an expert in the field, in the same way that the Board of Medical Practice does. The purpose of this advisory committee, as opposed to being involved in actually reviewing complaints or disciplinary matters, would be to view them in situations of overlapping scopes and advise the board. I think Mr. Renner said it well. When does the board of when does the practice of medicine and the board of the practice of nursing intersect or overlap, and what can be safe? The board would certainly welcome and looks to that how that will evolve over years. Certainly, nurses do things that only physicians did. Even 10 and 20 years ago, that's how quickly the evolution of the practice of healthcare has advanced, and the board would welcome that. However, the model that the Board of Medical Practice uses would not be appropriate since the board already regulates advanced practice registered nurses.
Thank you.
And I just
Senator Sharon.
And just to complete this amendment, I would draw your attentions to section on page 91, if you go to that in your bill, it's the section 27 relates to pain intervention therapies, which is a lot of what the conversation is around. It describes in section 27 the implementation of non-surgical pain intervention therapies provided upon referral by a physician. That section, this amendment also adds and strengthens the requirements of the CRNA to meet that request that Dave Renner was talking about, which is to make sure that the practice is safe, even though the data is indicating already that the practice is safe, that these are procedures and practices already practiced by CRNAs. It's not an expanded use of interventional pain strategies. But what we are adding to the current language and to section 27 is that this is specifically to the CRNA who, under a collaborative management, practices in a facility licensed by the Commissioner of Health. That's a very important statement that we're talking here clearly to everybody, including the interventional pain docs, that we're not talking about going up and setting up independent clinics that are outside of an integrated practice. This is in a facility licensed by the Commissioner of Health. And on the second page, it says under 2.2 that when you go to work in a hospital, a licensed hospital, you have to go through a credentialing process. This is true for all health professionals who want to work in a hospital. You can't just, because you're a physician or a nurse, work in a licensed healthcare facility. You have to present your credentials. You have to present your experience. You have to have background checks. You have to go through quite a vetting before that institution will take the risk of taking you in. And this language here clearly articulates that documentation that the licensed registered nurse has been credentialed by the facility, so they're in a facility that's licensed, and that they have to go through that credentialing process for pain management procedures. And what I would add to you about that is that there's nothing in this bill that restricts a facility for which you are employed as a healthcare practitioner from further restricting what you can do. That's always the right of the employer to add to and require more. It does not need to be in law. It will be underneath the certification process for the CRNA within an institution that is already accredited as a licensed facility. So these are very strong statements that help respond to the concerns that persons have about maintaining public safety.
Okay. Senator Sharon. We've got a couple of members with questions in an attempt to narrow the number of issues we're still working on. I'm happy to see the 822 amendment, but given we just had broad discretion for the proponents of this to testify, I'd like to also call people up who may have concerns about this before we're done. But with that, Senator Franzen, did you have an amendment to add the high-tech scans to this amendment that Senator Sharon said would be considered a friendly amendment and further narrow the scope of issues that were?
Well, Mr. Chair, I actually have that as a separate amendment. I do have an amendment that pertains to these two issues that we're tackling with Senator Sharon's amendment. So it would be an amendment to her amendment just to take these issues, you know, on their own, and then we can go to the other two issues, which are pain management and radiology. Or
Senator
imaging.
Franzen.
So I offer the A23 amendment.
Offers the A23 amendment to the A22 amendment.
Right.
So as clarification, I had thought that this was going to be the amendment to add the high-tech scans. This is not. This is a different approach on the two issues that the A22 was intended to resolve, which are the postgraduate clinical training and the the disciplinary review committee that would work underneath the Board of Medicine, I guess. On that, Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Sharon, for your bill. I think you are making attempts to move forward to address the concerns, so I appreciate it. I'd say my 823 amendment goes a little bit further on two fronts. First, the 2,000-hour requirement that's on your amendment on line 1.25. My amendment would increase that 2,000-hour requirement with a 4,000-hour requirement. That ensures that if we're going to have these type of procedures being done, that the training and quote-unquote residency requirement is actually commensurate for what they're able to do. On the second big piece of the amendment that I'm offering is on the advisory council. And as you said, Senator Sharon, it is more of a advisory with regards to reviewing prescribing trends, reviewing emerging practices. My amendment continues to keep that in place, but it also enforces the piece of enforcement grounds for discipline, complaints, and recommendations for licensure to the Board of Nursing. So it does include that factor that's included also on the medicine side with PAs. That same model would be the same model applied here. So it does go further than your amendment, and I think that would be acceptable for practice, for protecting patients and regulating bad actors, which I believe is in the spirit of your bill as a whole. And I would add, Mr. Chair, a lot has been talked about how CRNAs already do this work, and I want to alert members that we're talking about procedures like an epidural and comparing that to the entire scope of a subspecialty of medicine, which is intervention pain management. So there's substantially different. I've talked to many doctors in the course of the last few days about how this bill in front of us would allow for APRNs or CRNA, excuse me, to be able to practice in that subspecialty with really little regulation. And I don't believe that's in the best interest of the state of Minnesota. So I also want to make sure that at one point we hear from Dr. Wells in terms of explaining the difference between a procedure of an epidural versus intervention pain management and the drastic difference between those procedures, and agreed that the epidurals are already being done in rural settings, but when it comes to intervention pain management, as was described by some of the testifiers, is not an immediate need in terms of needing that intervention on the spot. And there's certainly, I would also like to pass out a handout, which also points to members the availability of intervention pain management physician practices all around the state. So the argument that this is for tackling a rural need is also in question because of the nature of the practice and the obvious risk to having the lack of training in this area. So I think the 4,000-hour increase is reasonable given what we're talking about, the procedures that we're talking about, and also the board or the advisory council having the ability to, again, police self or bad actors. We can't let this be a self-regulating environment where a practitioner just says, I'm not training that, so I'm not going to do it. It's like myself saying I'm a lawyer, and I know I'm not specialized in patent law. Frankly, in patent law, you have to take a subspecialty bar to practice patent law. So I know I can't do it, but it's regulated. So I think we need that same mechanism here.
So Senator Sharon, responses to the A23 amendment. I can see that it goes a bit farther than what you were trying to accomplish. And we'll
yes,
have to-
the two differences in this amendment from the amendment that I have for you, the A22 amendment, are the increase in the number of hours for the post-practice supervisory process.
Removal of the
clinic. And then the second is...
Setting.
The second difference, in essence, is the language that I'm going to have Shirley Brecken speak to about enforcement of grounds for discipline and complaints and recommendations on disciplinary matters. I just want to correct that people aren't willy-nilly going out and practicing whatever they want to. They are licensed professionals that are under the process of a board, and they're held to disciplinary standards. And there's an articulation. We don't think we should have to articulate as professional people that we will be professional, but we are doing that since that's being questioned or challenged. So I can assure you the Board of Nursing, like the Board of Medical Practice, establishes the rules and regulations under which a licensed person can practice, and if they violate that, they face disciplinary practice. So we'll speak to those two different issues. First, I'm going to have Ms. Brecken speak to the Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Advisory Council amendment to my amendment.
And Senator Sharon, and we are going to try to get some of the others that are in favor of this amendment up to the table as well.
Okay,
and so
well, perhaps they'd like to come now.
Ms. Brecken, if you could be brief, it would be very helpful. I do see that the amendment changes the postgraduate, residency or whatever you want to call it, from 1 to 2 years. It also removes the clinic setting, apparently. No? Oh, it says it deletes clinic or hospital.
See, I don't know what this change means.
It doesn't. Okay, never mind. I misread that. A different clinic setting. And then the duties of this advisory council would be broader under this. So, Ms. Brecken, to those points. And Senator Sharon, just for clarity as well, I take it that you would not consider this a friendly amendment at this point.
No, I do not. There's a number of issues. First of all, it removes an experienced advanced practice nurse from supervising an advanced practice nurse and puts it under the supervision of a physician. You can absolutely be certain that nurses are going to be opposed to that.
So
that's a problem. We want to talk about why 2,000 or 4,000 is the right number. We're willing to have that conversation. And we want to make certain that the language that's added here on page 1.5 does not undo what is practicing in a licensed facility, including a surgery center, where there are the resources around them. So if you want to start with the first part of the bill on the 2,000 hours or the other provisions.
Rather quickly, and I have Senator Benson and Senator Brown's removed. Senator Benson's removed. Okay, we're getting there. If the folks who don't like these changes would be brief in their testimony, I'd like to get some testimony from those who would be supportive of this. Ms. Brecken, whoever's going to start.
Mr. Chair, Senator Friends, and
state your name for the record once more.
Yes, I'm sorry. My name is Shirley Brecken, the Executive Director for the Board of Nursing. What I would just emphasize is the difference, again,
This model that's being proposed is one that's used by the Board of Medical Practice to regulate non-physicians. The Board of Nursing does currently regulate advanced practice registered nurses and has done so for almost 40 years. So the Board does deal with complaints against advanced practice registered nurses, takes appropriate disciplinary action.
This
and
is exactly
in fact,
what you were describing
just what
to
I said.
Us in your last testimony.
Yeah.
So we could... you had some additional testimony, hopefully not duplicative.
Not what, duplicative.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Linda Lindeke. I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner since 1978. I have educated nurse practitioners, nurse anesthetists, and midwives, and clinical nurse specialists about the regulation and the laws, both in this nation and in this state. I welcome the work that has been done. I see such attention to detail. And as a nurse educator for my 40 years, I welcome having clarity. I also think that we have some errors here in the thinking this morning of 4,000 hours somehow protecting the public beyond what is already there. We have 17 to 18 states who have not found it necessary to do this sort of regulation. And what will happen if we move forward with this is that my graduates will go to other states. They can drive a very few number of miles to do that, and they have lucrative offers from throughout the country. This is because the public needs the skills of advanced practice nurses. We are not lone rangers. We weed out any bad actors as best we can as educators. They have 4 years of nursing with clinical experience in their baccalaureate. They then have graduate education of 3 years. We have increased the number of credits for pharmacology, the number of clinical hours, the stringency of everything we can think of as educators, just as you have with licensing boards and in the laws and in the institutional credentialing bodies. As an educator of these four roles in these six populations, I cannot sit and listen to Minnesota move to the bottom of the list in advanced practice nursing with good intentions. I do not doubt the intentions of protecting the public. We are protecting the public through a second license, and that is new in this state. We are additionally agreeing to protect the public through advisory, interprofessional advisory boards, new in the work this year. I, as an educator, will sleep better at night knowing that you now understand more of how we work with physicians, we work with pharmacists, occupational therapists. I see 4 to 6 patients per week myself, and I do that with the sickest and the smallest of babies who were discharged from the neonatal intensive care in a team. A team means that we trust each other on the basis of our education and preparation, and we will do that if we move forward with Senator's
work.
We need to
allow folks who are interested in and members.
The amendment is not satisfactory that has just recently been proposed, and we do support the spirit of this bill up to the point of this amendment.
So we are going to be called up to session very shortly. We can continue this conversation for a couple of minutes until we are called up. But it appears we are not going to have a final vote on this bill. We will recess and come back this afternoon. I'm personally a little frustrated. I hoped that we were able to narrow the number of issues this morning. That has not happened, and we haven't even gotten to the amendments regarding the one big-ticket item, which is interventional pain management. And I would ask that both sides sit down between when we recess and 4 o'clock and work very, very hard to try to get to some core agreements around these. These three were the easy ones. Interventional pain management, we haven't even really begun to scratch just yet. And what we have is the APRNs having a list of 9 things that they won't do. I know that the docs say that those are all very high-end. I'm not none of us around here are doctors. We're not scientists. We have a very difficult time with this. The docs want to put it, we'll see this amendment soon. They want to put it in the practice of medicine. That's a poison pill for the nurses. You know, I think there's a middle ground there, and I don't see it, and I don't see either side offering it, and I am very frustrated by this, and I hope that by the time we come back at 4 o'clock, we can have some better. I really feel uncomfortable asking our members to pick sides. If I need to tip my hand a little bit, I will vote for this bill, no matter what amendments go on it. I think that this is a very important discussion. I want APRNs to have independent practice. I want it to be safe for our people and our residents. And I think that we are close enough that we can close this deal in a way that people can be happy, but I don't see it before us right now, and we are out of time today. This morning, we will be in room 123 at 4 p.m. at the point we recess, and I'd like to give Senator Sharon a chance to respond. And
I think. Are you wanting to complete this current amendment right now?
I don't think that we're ready to vote on this amendment either.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Senator Lori. We'll be happy to come back. I think that I would just have you consider, as the chair of this committee, that this conversation is not new to the members of this committee, that what we're talking about that's being presented in these amendments is not new to the members. You're allowing for testimony, allowing for people to say these things again. But I think there's not a person in this room that hasn't heard all of these various perspectives and arguments. And I think it will be a matter of us asking them to decide what the best process is to move forward.
Senator Benson and then Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as a member of the Policy Committee, I have heard some of these issues before, but I am incredibly disappointed that we are now in finance without clear direction as to what good policy should be. And we are spending an awful lot of time going over things, and I hope when we come back at 4 o'clock, there is some answer. We are putting a whole bunch of new language into statute. I haven't gotten an answer as to what it allows CRNAs to do that they are not already allowed to do. I am reticent to put language into statute that is already functioning in our medical community. We're enumerating things that CRNAs shouldn't do. I don't know if that's a comprehensive list or if we're going to keep coming back and adding things to statute in future years because some CRNA went into medical practice. As a member of the Policy Committee, I don't think I should have let this go out with this level of work to do, and I hope at 4 o'clock things are much more clear.
Senator Hayden.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am starting to become increasingly more frustrated with the process, frankly, Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon. One of the things that I'm a little confused about, and I may say, is that it appears that we're not kind of working with it. It seems to be disjointed. So if we say it's 2,000 to 4,000, is that really driven by the pain management section of the bill that we want more, or is that for all of the other practices that APRNs do? Or, you know, so it sounds like there's kind of an elephant in the room, which is the pain management, and we're kind of working around that as opposed to kind of getting to the core of the issue and not necessarily dragging everybody else through the process. I have a lot of constituents that really want to see this bill move forward, but when talk about the pain management, they didn't know anything about it, and they were not thinking about that. That is a subspecialty that clearly is driving this discussion, and so I wanted to be really clear that we want to get this bill out, but it appears that the elephant in the room is clearly this pain management issue, and all of the extra stuff that we want to do is really, from my perspective, and I could be wrong, then that's even more of a problem, that it's really driven by this particular issue where there is high anxiety. So hopefully we can kind of get through as much of this bill as we can and then spend the amount of time and the extra time that we need, the extra training, the advisory boards, the oversight, and really narrow that to what I think we all are really talking about, which is really the high anxiety about this interventional pain management therapy. So I just really hope that we can get to that point. Otherwise, it seems like we're dragging everybody else through this fight.
Senator Lori, thank you, Senator Hayden.
There, Senator Sharon.
And I think that it's important to know that there are four amendments, four components to these amendments. Pain management is one we haven't talked about. The ones we're talking about now, which is the advisory board, the 2,000 hours post-licensure and the diagnostic imaging interpretation, which Senator Franzen will offer, are all not related to the are related to this entire bill. They are not, so if we can get through those three, which are, I think, you know, I think that it's possible to get through those three without difficulty. It is there is.
We thought so too a few minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. If you disagree with me,
oh, that's
I didn't. I failed to mention that part. So,
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I'm not mistaken, in the House they pretty much emasculated the whole bill. Is that correct?
I am not aware of that. I thought that the bill was in. It yes. was very strong in the House moving forward. It was my understanding.
I believe it's fairly.
Okay.
And so the work, it will be done in this committee. And to get a good bill out, we're going to have to do it in this committee.
We're under call. We stand in recess till 4 p.m. We will get back together in room 123.